Welcome to episode 238. We will talk to Lauren Daigle as she is quarantined in a state that I didn't think she'd be quarantined in. She'll be coming on a little bit. And then we'll talk to Ketch from Okra Medicine Show. Two guests we've never had on, and we were going to have both in studio, and the quarantine got us.
Yeah.
So we will talk to them both on the phone. But we have some music artists coming up. I did want to talk about new music out this week. For example, Ladylike, which is Ingrid Andress' first album. It's her debut album. And it has this song, More Hearts Than Mine. If I bring you home to mama, I guess I better warn ya. And she also has another song that wasn't put out until her record came out called The Stranger. She's really good. Ingrid and I have been friends for a long time, and her first ever radio performance was on the show, and she played Ladylike. If we were playing Ladylike, and I also like, too, that's only 8 songs on the record. I can listen and actually listen to 8 songs before I decide what I like. Because there's a record with like 14 songs. I'm listening. In the first 7 seconds, I'm like, nah, I don't like this one. Like when Ed Sheeran puts out his 27 tracks, and I like Ed Sheeran. But that whole duet album he did, mm-hmm. is a lot of tracks.
A lot.
Right? I don't think I got through that. Or I didn't get through it fairly because I would be like, there's so many tracks here. I'm just going to go through and see if I like the first 15 seconds. I do like an 8-song album if you're going to put that many and call it an album. I prefer an EP these days, unless it's my favorite artist. How many tracks that have?
Let's see. It's still pulling it up.
It's so many, you can't even get through them.
Can't even get it all on screen. It is...
Hold on. There's some great songs too, and some songs that I discounted early that are now big hits, but I didn't give them enough time.
It's 15 on that.
Yeah, too much. Let's do about 8, 9. 9's a bit too much, but when they do 12 or 13, I just know there's 5 songs I'm not going to be able to really focus on. Decatur Country Red, excuse me, Decatur County Red from Jesse Alexander. She's written hits for Blake Shelton, Miley Cyrus, and Lee Bryce. This is her first album of new material since 2004. And we'll play Mama Drank first because she came up on the radio show and played this song. Here you go. Clean, clean, clean that kitchen. Wipe them baby's tears. In your home and she has a song with Randy Houser called Country Made Me Do It. I like Jesse a lot. Jesse and I have served on boards together where we've kind of been each other's entertainment during really long board meetings. So we got to be friends through that. And then she's done the Bobby cast. We did a whole long episode with her when she wrote Miley Cyrus's The Climb, Lee Bryce, I Drive Your Truck, Blake Shelton, a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool that her record is out. Just enjoy her anyway. Sophia Scott, new female artist, has a song called Beauty and the Flaws. No. Go. Florida Georgia Line has a song called I Love My Country. Kane Brown put out a song with John Legend called Last Time I Say Sorry. Best I can do, I won't say I'm sorry. The interesting thing about that, Kane was talking on a radio show about this, that he just got a call. He's like, hey, you want to write? So he goes to the studio and writes with them. He's like, oh my God. And him and John Legend write, and they record it right then. Like they wrote at the studio, which is something that doesn't happen here in Nashville a lot. Kip Moore has a new song called Wild World. And he announced his record's coming out soon too, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. I guess Dua Lipa put out her record, which is a big deal, right?
Yeah.
I know her because my girlfriend loves her. That goes to church with her.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Here is Don't Start Now. Don't show up. And the album is called Future Nostalgia. So I guess the whole album's out. That makes sense because I've been seeing people, mostly females in their mid-20s to young 30s, Instagram story about it.
Mm-hmm.
5 Seconds of Summer put out a record. I'm trying to see if I know anybody else. A self-titled album from country singer James Robert Webb, who's also a real-life physician. Yeah. I know we don't. Do we have any music?
No.
Okay. But I did see that was out there too. So, decent amount of music. It's just weird that they're putting it out and the whole world is kind of focused on the news and corona and what can we do and we're trapped. And I wonder, because I saw the metrics that streaming music is way down.
Yeah.
I wonder why that is.
I don't know. I feel like people aren't in the mood for new music right now.
But just streaming music in general has been down. But I guess I haven't streamed much music. I guess you're not
you're driving as much. So
driving or running or at work.
At the gym.
Yeah, maybe.
I find it's out of my routine now.
Me too. Like, as I was going, I don't know why, I started to think back. And unless I'm getting out of the shower and I yell at Alexa to play something.
Because I don't just sit around the house listening to music. It's when I'm doing something and it's all the things I'm not doing anymore.
That's a good point. Because when I read that, I was like, why would I would feel like it would be up because nobody's got anything to do. But maybe it's because everybody has nothing to do, including listening to music.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I definitely haven't turned music on. Okay, well, that's what's up. That's music out. Check out Mike's podcast called Movie Mike's Movie Podcast. Check out Kelly Henderson's podcast, The Velvet's Edge. A lot of interesting. If you're a female in your late 20s to mid 30s, early 40s, I think this podcast is for you. So check out The Velvet's Edge with Kelly Henderson. That's the deal. We're going to take a little break, come back, talk to Lauren Daigle, and talk to Ketch from Okro Medicine Show. Thank you, guys. About to talk with Lauren Daigle. Here is You Say from Lauren. That song is funny feeling to me because you know how you hear a song and it reminds you of a certain place in your life?
Yeah.
I didn't know Lauren when she was performing this on Dancing with the Stars. I had met her pre the finale and she was singing this song on the finale. I didn't know she was going to sing it over when we were getting ready to go out to actually win the Mirror Ball, right? And so I saw Lauren and I went up to her and said hello, and we did some rehearsal stuff together, kind of getting ready for the show. She was super nice. She was like, I live in Nashville. And I'll mention this coming up with her, but Keith Urban is the one that kind of put me onto her. And then he mentioned her on my show, too, and was like, hey, Lauren Daigle, she's her music's real great. And so she had mentioned that to me, and so we kind of were talking back and forth. And nobody expected me to win that show, Dancing with the Stars. And so we made a bet. I said, okay, because her manager was there, too, and everybody's in Nashville. It's like, all right, if I win, we're all going to dinner. And I ended up winning. And so we weren't able to go to dinner before she left. And those world tours that they do,
yeah,
they don't come back home.
No.
It's not like country tours where they go away for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or like my tours where I go away for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Friday, Saturday, whatever. They go away and don't come back for like 4 or 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so we become pretty friendly after that. And then, anyway, I win the show, but on that finale part where we're all standing there, they show a clip of you throughout the whole season. It's like the last 5 minutes of the show. On the finale of my season of Dancing with the Stars, there were four teams, and it would go, Bobby and Sharna. And they would show clips of us through the season. And in the background was her singing the song live right behind us. And so she's performing live. They're doing the clips. Everybody's kind of emotional. And then as soon as she finishes her song, they're like, and the winner is. And then it was, boom, Bobby and Sharna. So every time I hear this song, when it comes on the radio, if it comes up in like my streaming or on satellite, I'll play sometimes on the pop channel.
Mm-hmm.
It just reminds me of that time on Dancing with the Stars. And that's also how she's here now too, because you know, I met her then. But that song, I believe. And I'm like, oh my God.
It's about to happen.
It's about to happen. I'm about to win or I'm about to lose. But yeah, yeah. She has some number one Christian songs. That's one of them. Trust in You is another one. When She has Back to God featuring Reba. Obviously, she has You Say. And then she put out the Christmas song, which is a public domain song. She just re-sang it and went number one.
Yeah.
Here you go. Nights roasting on an open fire. Yeah. So, really a big fan of Lauren. And I think she's, by the way, let me say this. She has a new podcast called Dago Bites coming out real soon. The first episode is March 20th. Oh, so it's already out.
Yep.
Okay, well, maybe I should subscribe now. Caught me. I don't subscribe yet, but that's Daigle Bites is the first episode of her new podcast. Hey, Lauren, how are you?
Hey, Bobby.
How's it going? Where are you?
How are you? Where am I?
Yeah.
I'm in Georgia.
Are you traveling back, or are you just staying in Georgia for a while?
I'm quarantining currently in Georgia. I was doing my best to travel back. I grabbed my car because I was like, you know what? I just don't know how long this quarantine is going to last. So I think I'm going to drive home to Louisiana. And I didn't get very far, but, you know, it is what it is.
I saw where you had to announce that the tour was going to be postponed. So when did that decision get made?
We made that, gosh, that was, maybe the Grand Rapids show. So, like, I think the 13th, 12th, something like that, of March, we had to, it was kind of one of those moments where it was, like, hour by hour. Like, we'd get a call from the CDC. They'd say, we're going to postpone all events larger than 1,000 people for the next 2 weeks. And then it was, like, for the next month. And then it was, like, for the next 7 weeks, and they just kept pushing back. And so, I don't know the exact dates of everything quite yet, but we're not canceling, which is good. It just means we're just having to move it all.
Have you talked to your family at home? I was watching this morning that New Orleans is really struggling. Like, they're one of the real hot spots now, as far as like New York, LA, Chicago, New Orleans with coronavirus. Have you talked to...
Yeah, because it's daggum Mardi Gras.
Right.
We're all down there having a good old time, and then everybody got the daggum virus. I mean, it's not funny. I told my friend the other day, I said, you know why New Orleans is the next hot spot? It's because we're a culture that just loves being with people. We love being around each other. We share everything. It's like, come on inside. I got a cup of pot of coffee. Oh, you need a different cup. You know what I mean? It's like, we're just very communal, and it's so vibrant. The culture is so vibrant and so rich and so alive. And so it makes sense to me as to why it would be the next hot spot. People don't really stay away from each other too much. But I have some friends down there that I've been calling pretty much every day, FaceTiming every day, and just saying, all right, how are y'all doing? How's everybody holding up? And one of my friends was like, we decided to stay home and we're building chicken coops and we ordered chickens and seeds and stuff. I'm like, of course. There you go. New Orleans quirk. I love it.
What was Lafayette like growing up for you?
I love Lafayette. It was very rich in culture. And whenever I was a kid, it was, you know, my grandfather, he put me on his feet and he would teach me how to dance. And then, you know, you'd go into all the Zydeco rooms and people were playing the washboard and the accordions, and it's generational, you know, passed down from one family member to the next. And I think that says a lot about our culture. It's very, where I came from was pretty hippie, honestly. Like, there were a lot of people that, it was like where the oil field and art collided. Like, Lafayette is a city with a lot of oil, a lot of business there, but there's this like kind of sect of people that, you know, make everything from scratch and play music all the time and create. It's very creative. People are always, you know, creating festivals and different things like that just to bring people together. And I remember as a child, we had this thing called Festival International. And every year, Lafayette would host this, and it was named one of the world's largest free festivals And I think like over 100,000 people or something would come each year. But the beauty of it was this celebration of culture. And so people from all over the world would fly in and perform like their traditional, like African dances, like from the Congo, or, you know, certain things from South America and Canada, lots of French music. And so it was really diverse and really beautiful to see Lafayette like celebrate something so unique, honestly. And so I think something about growing up underneath that musical influence, it really inspired me, and kind of, I would say that was probably one of the most influential things I was a part of as a kid.
I think I, like a lot of people that are listening to this show right now, probably started to learn of you in the last couple of years. Like, we were kind of late to the Lauren Daigle train. And I think you and I talked about this at one point. I knew of you because Keith Urban was like, hey, you should listen to Lauren Daigle. Like, he told me that, and then he came on my show and said that as well. So when I started to look up some of the early stuff about you, comment on this because I didn't know this. It says, Lauren did not consider music seriously until contracting a debilitating illness. She claims it was one of the best things that happened to her. What is that little block? What happened there?
Okay. I don't know how debilitating it quite was. You know, that might be a word that was expanded upon. But, it's true. When I was in high school, I was diagnosed with this virus that put me on homebound for about 18 months. And honestly, I went to a college preparatory school. It was very academics driven. I knew I always wanted to sing. Like, growing up, they'd say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I'd say, I want to be a singer, because I would love listening to, you know, Whitney Houston and Celine Dion and these women that had these powerhouse voices and stuff. And I'd sing all over the house and make up melodies or whatever. And it was, I guess, about my ninth grade year, when it was kind of like, okay, but what are you really going to do? And I remember my grandfather sitting me down and saying, okay, come on, what are you thinking of? What do you want to do? And for some reason, I just adopted that, oh, I can't really do music. Like, that's just some pipe dream. I'm going to go into the medical field because I love anatomy. I love biology. It's fascinating to me. So I end up kind of in my mind thinking, I'll probably go into something medical. Well, right as I started kind of gearing my world for that, I ended up getting this illness. And because I was home, I would just sing all the time. Like, it was basically the only thing that I could do that allowed me to dream and allowed me to create. And my mom put me in voice lessons because it wasn't too hard on my body, and kind of kept me out of depression and or helped with it, if you will. And so, it became therapy for me. It became like just a source of healing during that time. And because of it, I feel like that's why I sing the songs that I do now. It's because if I walked through something that was difficult or painful, isolating, lonely, maybe I can make music that inspires someone who's walking through that same situation, you know?
At what point, though, when you're singing, do you realize, well, I'm actually really good? And I don't mean that in a funny way, but when did you realize that you were better than even the local contemporaries for you?
So, okay, this is funny, because I feel like I really struggled with confidence for a long time as far as if I was good or not. My mom would hear me sing all over the house, and she went to our choir director at church and said, my daughter sings, I have no idea if she's good or not, but if you like need someone on the back row of the choir, please call her. And he said, come on around the back of the church. I want to see what you sing like. And he had me sing this song, and I was really sheepish about it. And he said, Lauren, I've heard you sing. Like, I mean, I've heard you laugh. And so I know that you can belt. And I was like, okay. And so I just went for it. And he said, get ready, because in 2 weeks, you're going to start singing that song in church. And I remember in that moment feeling like, man, okay, this is kind of exciting. This is like a shred of hope. Maybe I can do this. Well, then after a couple months of singing at church, everybody did the classic, you got to go on American Idol. So I tried out for American Idol, and that was in Atlanta. And I remember there was 10,000 people there, and I got a golden ticket after all those 10,000 people. And so that was kind of when I was like, huh, well, am I only good for, like, my little community, or am I good for the state, or am I good for the country, or am I good for the world? Like, how do you measure this? And I think going on American Idol gave me a boost of confidence, but I got cut at the point where you can go on to the live shows. And so that was me having to wrestle, okay, are you going to actually believe in yourself a little bit? And I think I went back home and I started singing in random bands and stuff. And we would sing cover gigs all over the city. And I went to LSU and I took voice, you know, with LSU. And there were just so many things that I think slowly but surely started building my confidence along the way. And so I would say American Idol was one moment. And I was like, huh, maybe I actually have a voice. And then another time was whenever I was getting signed by the record label. That was another moment that I was like, is this a joke? Like, is this really happening? Am I really good? Am I, like, good enough for a record label to invest in? Like, there were all these questions, but they were. And so they were kind, and it helped grow me, and now we're here. And you know what's so funny, Bobby, is that I feel like there are so many different stages in this industry. You know, there's so many different moments, and sometimes you feel like, wow, how am I getting a chance to be here? And sometimes you're like, I've got to keep working hard so that I can get to the next spot. And I feel like that push makes me want to keep learning. So even though I'm in this phase that I'm in right now, all right, well, what qualifies me to go to the next level? Or how can I train myself? Or even in times like the quarantine, like, learn something new that is going to keep me excelling to reach the next bar, you know? I feel like that quest and that journey for, okay, well, am I good enough for this? Or do I have potential here? I think that's probably going to exist in me till I die. And I think there's something really, good about that.
You know, you bring up American Idol. I've been working on that show for 3 years now. And what I talk with them about off the camera, you're one of the examples. And I used two. One is Hillary Scott from Lady A, who's I'm close friends with. And the other one is you, in that it's never an on-camera moment, but it's an off moment to tell people, just because you didn't make the show means you just weren't right for the show. It doesn't mean it doesn't mean you're not good. It doesn't mean you don't have your own style. It doesn't mean you have your own thing. You just weren't right for this one little lane of a TV show that's happening right this second. And so, you know, your story is one. Did you try it more than once, or did you do it one time?
I did. I tried out. So the first year I tried out, I made it to the end of Hollywood Week. Second year I tried out, didn't even make it to Hollywood. It was brutal. Had the flu. And then the third year, made it to the end of Hollywood Week, and then went to Las Vegas. It was when they were doing that. And then I got cut after Las Vegas.
Wow. Three times. Isn't it wild? You're here now. And I think you mentored last season or the season before, right?
Yeah. It was amazing last season. It was honestly one of the most exciting things I had done in my career so far. I told Lee, my manager, I was like, I would do that any day. Like, there is something so surreal about just encouraging someone who's at the very, very beginning of their journey. Like, I can understand why you would go on the show and kind of, like, be a voice for those people, because it's exhilarating, and there's so much potential behind these people. It's amazing to be a part of it.
Did you always set out, when you started to go, I can do music, did you just always set out to go down the Christian lane?
No, it's funny. Whenever I was sick, like back in that season when I was really sick, I would always say, God, I'll do music, but I never want to sing Christian music. I, like, did not want to be a part of that at all. One is because I did not want my friends to make fun of me. I was so against that. Two is just because I wanted something sonically different, and I didn't know if what I like, what I really loved, would fit that format. But I knew that the hope that I was given when I was sick, because like I would have these crazy dreams, like I thought I was having cabin fever, like losing my mind, you know. But I would have these dreams, and while I was at home, and it would be of me on stage or within a word or chart or song or whatever, and they were so vivid and so real. And then like years later, when they actually started happening, I was like, oh my gosh, these are those dreams that I was shown like when I was like 15 and 16. And so I think the hope that I was given during that time to just hang on, and I would research all like so many stories about different actors or business owners that went through a really hard time. How did they overcome it? How did they use their difficulty or the obstacle to be kind of a platform in which they launched from, instead of like the space that overcame them? And in that, I found just so much hope in Jesus. And so I remember saying, I don't want to sing Christian music, but I want to sing music that brings hope to people. And then the first record label that called was a Christian label. And I was like, well, this is an open door. And they've been so kind, and they've been such great partners the entire way. It's been wonderful.
You did mission work too, right?
A little bit. I feel like I do more mission work now, which is funny, but I went to Africa once. We went and visited some hospitals. And then I went to Brazil, helped build a church when I was like 18. And then went to Tuscaloosa when all the tornadoes came through and helped clean up and do things like that. One fun thing when I was a kid, though, this is pretty awesome. My parents are just, they're people that would just give the shirt off their back, you know. And Katrina came through and wiped out New Orleans. Well, we were in Lafayette, 2 hours away. And so a lot of people in New Orleans came to Lafayette to kind of seek refuge with nothing. I mean, they had nothing. And people think that the quarantine is intense, and it is. And I was telling a friend how similar to Katrina that this quarantine is, because we had no water in the, grocery stores. All the gas was out and things like that, just because so many people were trying to get as much as they possibly could. Well, my parents went and made these huge pots of gumbo and brought us down to the red light district as like, you know, kids. We were probably 10 years old maybe, and brought us down to the red light district, and we served gumbo. We would go and knock on all the motel doors and say, see that table down there? There's free gumbo down there. Come on down. We got potato salad and gumbo. We'll serve you. And so you'd see all these people just coming out of there, hotel rooms, motel rooms, whatever. And it was so special just to see such a diverse and unique group of people coming together over food, and in a time that everything felt chaotic and wild. And I think that built love for humanity inside of me, you know, in a way that sometimes words don't. Sometimes you have to experience it like that, like where it's really real. So, yeah, those are some of the mission stories from when I was a kid.
And I'm always curious about when songs start to cross over, because it happens where I come from, a country, and I've worked in other formats too, but when your song starts to cross over and go from big in the Christian world and Christian radio to pop radio, how wide does your reach get, and how quickly does that happen?
Yeah, that was wild. So, it happened very organically, honestly. Like, whenever I put out Look Up Child, the record, I didn't have a mainstream label or anything like that to kind of cross the record over. And You Say was on Christian radio at the time, and then mainstream program directors would just start playing it. And a lot of the program directors that I talked to said their wives would come in and say, I heard this song on Pandora or Spotify or whatever. Can you play this on the record? I just love it. I just think that you would love this, and I think people would love it. And it was a lot of wives, honestly, that, you know, got it on there, which is really funny. But so organically, they started adding the song. And after that, I was like, okay, well, we got to get a mainstream radio team. So we signed. It's kind of funny. We actually signed to the record label after it was already starting to get onto the radio, onto mainstream radio. And the difference when something like that happens, it takes it from one people group and spreads it so far and wide. And, you know, the craziest thing is when you're like, you're in Europe or you're in all of these random continents, countries, and people are singing the words to your song so emphatically, like, in a way that I'm like, oh my gosh, these people have lived with this music. They have absorbed this music as their own. And I think that's what's so profound about crossing over, is the numbers multiply pretty intensely as far as the amount of people that you're able to reach.
I was looking at some of the stuff you were talking about, and you talk about the prize fund, which I think is very interesting. Would you talk about that for a second?
Which part?
The prize fund, which is the school lunches.
Yes. Okay. So the sweet girl who works on my management team, her name is Liz, and she said, Lauren, there's a lot of things going on with these kids who they're used to getting lunches every day at school or breakfast every day at school, and now that school is being shut down temporarily, you know, they don't have a way of getting food. And there was this picture on, I follow this Instagram feed called NOLA News, and NOLA News posted this little girl, she's like 3 years old, and it said, we're a family in need, anything helps. And like the caption was, the mother had just gotten laid off from her phlebotomy job, and they were just trying to get anything they could. And, you know, if that is going to be the shape of the world, I want to do everything I can to just help people in a moment of crisis or concern. And thinking about those kids, I was like, yeah, there's absolutely no way that we can't help them. So I'm pretty pumped. People were really generous. And I think a lot of times, you know, people get scared in times like these. People are unsure in times like these. But to see people say, you know what, I'm not going to let, like, the fear control this. I'm going to still give and help people that need it, you know. And so I'm so excited. I don't know quite yet what number we're at, but I know it's been going really well.
Well, it's great to finally talk to you under weird circumstances, for sure, but I'm glad you're safe. I hope you are able to get home. They're starting to put restrictions on people crossing state lines now. You can't even go from Louisiana to Texas. Not that you're trying to go to Texas, but because of the amount of coronavirus in Louisiana, they're shutting down that trip to Texas. You can't get into Florida now. So I don't know if you got a map with you, but you may have to do some, like, get out of the car, run across the border. But I'm talking about state borders here.
Yeah, back road action.
Yeah.
I know all about that.
Well, Lauren, great to talk to you. Be safe. Congratulations on everything. Everybody can follow Lauren at Lauren_Daigle. And hopefully I'll see you around town soon, Lauren, when everything's normal.
Thanks, Bobby. Thanks for having me.
All right, bye,
Stay
Lauren.
Safe.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye. Ketch, do you live over by Amy? She said she saw you and you guys were talking the other day about this.
Yeah, I live over by Amy. I live about four doors down from Amy, maybe six.
You're that close, huh?
Yeah, she's right down the street. Our kids play together sometimes, and she's wonderful.
So,
and so is her husband.
You're doing a homeschooling. Are you having to teach, or are the classes given to you and you kind of observe them learning?
You know, it's pretty cool getting to be super engaged with their learning. But the school, you know, I started the school. It's this is a school that I started down the street from me, and I'm the chairman of the board and the founder. That's sort of been my, you know, all of us in the country music business, we're charitable people. We're charitable types. For me, my charitable pursuits run me straight into education because that's my family business. My parents were lifelong educators. So I started this school about 5 years ago down the street called Episcopal School of Nashville, and it keeps me pretty busy when I'm not on the road. So it's been really fun, not only for my own kids, but creating a distance learning program for all of the kids in the school. And then on Friday will be the first time that I do an Instagram Live for the school kids and do some story time and some music as well.
You started a school. I had no idea.
Yeah, this is true.
You didn't want to name it
the nation's newest Episcopal school.
And you didn't want to name it the Ketch School of Arts or, you know, Ketch Middle School, nothing like that?
No, man. No, I'm. It's not for my own glory. That's for sure. If I did, I would have picked something a lot easier, man.
Last time we saw each other was, I think, side stage at the Opry. It's always good.
Grand Ole Opry. God bless it.
It's always good to see you because I tell you, when you guys play, talking about Old Crow, that is, I mean, it's like a party on stage. I would compare it, and I've compared it in interviews, to watching. When a hip-hop artist gets on stage and they're like, he has like eight guys on stage with him, they're all going, yeah, yeah, except you guys are doing that, except you all are supremely skilled with your instruments and vocals. Like, it is just a sight to be seen whenever you get to see an Old Crow performance. And I've been able to see you guys play at the Opry a few times, but not out on the road. What's an Old Crow show like out on the road?
Well, I must say it's a lot wilder than it is at the Opry. Because the Opry is largely a tourist crowd, and you know, folks are a little bit more presentable. They get dressed up, and at an Old Crow show, they get drunk, they have a wild time, and they throw down. And so you'll see the spirit just almost raises the roof when we play out on the road. And I can't tell you, I'm sure you're doing a lot of interviews with guys and gals right now who are saying the same thing. We just can't wait to get back to the people.
Yeah. You know, I was kind of reading about the infancy of Old Crow, and it says that you guys started busking on street corners in the late 90s. But who is you guys? Like, who are the ones that were busking?
Well, it's funny, Bobby, but at this point, you know, it's been 21, maybe 22 years now. 98 is when we started, so this is our 22nd year of operation, and it's at that point where I'm the last guy from the original, you know, street corner crew.
How do you feel about that? You're the last blue link on Wikipedia. Like, when you look up the page, you're the one that's still in the band.
Yeah, I guess so. It feels right because, you know, it was my idea, and, I mean, somebody had to keep it all together. And I miss my guys from long ago, and I miss my guys from recently, and I love all of the members that have come through the ranks, and we've launched careers, and we've stuck it out, and I'm a stick-it-out kind of guy. So, you know, it makes sense that I'd still be here. But, man, I always think about a question like that, I always think about Merle Haggard saying that a life in country music is like a 50-year bus ride.
Yeah. When you guys were playing back then, what songs are you busking with? Like, what's Ketch at the infancy of Old Crow busking on the street corner with? What songs?
Well, Bobby, back then there was this really kind of strong ideology to the band that we were here to preserve old-time mountain music at all costs and protect it from the perils of all other commercial country forms, including bluegrass and other things that were not pure, true vine stuff. Now, I think about that attitude now, 22 years later, and I think, I love music. I just want to sing. I don't care what it is. But when I was 18, it had to be old-time string band music or nothing. And that's what Old Crow was out on the corner playing, was square dance music from the 19th century, if you can believe it, in the late 90s.
So your parents put what kind of influence on you? Because, you know, most teenagers aren't playing old mountain string music.
Yeah, it wasn't so much my parents. I mean, my parents are the ones that taught me how to I mean, my educational background is sort of was really helped me with this. You know, the same kind of guy that can keep an old time string band from a curb to a you know, arena, as we've done largely as an opener. We don't play a lot of arenas, but when we played to some big crowds, the same kind of spirit that allowed me to do that is also the same spirit that could help me start a school. Because what you need to start in the music business is luck and a divine talent and patience and faith and commitment. And it turns out those are actually the same prerequisites for starting a school as well. But for me, the reason I went with old-time music in my teens wasn't because of my parents, but it was because I played punk rock, and suddenly I made this transition to old-time string band music, and it felt so much like the same rabble-rousing, all-for-one, guts-and-glory, last-man-standing kind of, you know. To me, it was like Social Distortion or the Ramones. I just felt a raw intensity to the fiddle and the banjo working together and shouting out those lyrics.
Yeah, I'm reading here, too, about Wagon Wheel. And which now it's, for me, it's been two generations because I didn't know the Dylan part. I know it wasn't even a full song until you guys got it, but I knew you guys. And then I knew again when Darius did it at Country. But you were 17 years old. Is that true? Whenever you got a hold of Wagon Wheel?
Yeah, my buddy Critter, who is a founding member of Old Crow, who just retired last year. Critter brought me this bootleg when I was in, you know, junior in high school. And it had this, you know, we were listening to so much Bob then. It was like we were at the school of Bob Dylan. And so I heard this bootleg, and I just knew it was a hit. And so I wrote some, quick dashed off some lyrics, and then I had this song. But the story got even richer when I went to publish it because it turns out, because Bob Dylan said, sure, we'll split it 50-50. But by the way, Bob says he didn't write it. Bob said he learned it. It's a traditional song that he learned from Arthur Crudup. Now, Big Boy Crudup was from Memphis, a rhythm and blues player. And he's the guy that first recorded the song, well, that's all right, mama, that Elvis made such a big hit. Well, then it turned out that Big Boy Crudup didn't lay claim to the song either. He attributed it to Big Bill Brunzi a generation earlier from Mississippi who moved to Chicago. So anyway, if you believe that story, that then in its near century-long gestation, Wagon Wheel sees a shared authorship among three African Americans, a Jewish musical icon, and me. That's how far it took to get to Darius and to go number one. Unbelievable story.
But when you get it, it's not complete. If there were all of these writers on it, how come the song wasn't complete, Ketch?
I was missing that part about Johnson City and the hitchhiking trip. It was missing the Odyssey. It had this framework. But, you know, and what makes the song really beautiful to me is that it's an example of a true folk song. I mean, it took people that couldn't even sit down at the same lunch counter together to become a hit for the biggest African-American star in country music.
So you have it, you write it. Do you ever, how long until you actually get to talk to Bob Dylan in human life?
I've never met the man, Bobby.
You still haven't met him?
Uh-uh.
Unbelievable.
No, I never met him. But one time after after we had done a lot of work with Mumford and Sons, and Mumford's were on the Grammys, and we were out at one of our guys was out at the Grammys hanging out with the Mumford boys, and they did this big mashup one year with Dylan and the Avid Brothers, and they're all hanging out before this rehearsal, and Bob is and my friend from Old Crow is talking with T-Bone Burnett. And he's saying, yeah, I'm from Old Crow. Remember, we just did that project together on that Bill Monroe movie that never came out, when all of a sudden a shadowy figure lurking in the corner comes forth and says, are you at Old Crow? And Gil, my buddy in Old Crow, says, yeah, man, I'm an Old Crow. And Bob says, well, you guys are killing it.
And he met
so
Bob Dylan.
We never met, but according to the man, Old Crow's killing it.
Wow. So Darius gets it. First time you heard Darius's version, was it when it was already done and mastered, or did someone send it over to you first?
I had to approve a couple of lyric changes, but they were just written on paper or in an email or whatever. So first time I heard it was on WSM in 2013, and I wept great big muddy tears and just felt like I just said hallelujah.
Wow.
And I still say it.
Old Crow will be releasing a new song on Friday called Nashville Rising. Now I'm going to play a little bit of it here. So you, hopefully you'll hear it over your phone here. So here we go. 3, 2, 1. So Nashville Rising is coming out 1 month to the day from when the tornadoes hit Nashville. So tell me about this song, Ketch, just the whole thing here.
Well, I live in East Nashville. My kids and I heard the sirens go off at 12:55 on the morning of Super Tuesday. And I looked out the window and there was no wind. And I thought, oh my God, this is going to be something a lot worse than a tornado. We went downstairs when the wind started whipping. And the kids screamed, and it was really intense. And then it passed. And I turned and I said, I bet. Let's say a prayer, honey, because I know a lot of people might have been killed by this somewhere in Kentucky. Little did I know when I got up the next morning that it was 2 blocks away from my house. Literally 2 blocks. You know, I live right by the Five Points neighborhood. You know, we frequent the very community that has been destroyed. And so it was really easy to feel deep empathy. I didn't have power for a week, and same with others. And along with my friends in my school and other colleagues, we went right out and pitched in and East Nashville, North Nashville, up in Mount Juliet, and checked in with friends up in Putnam County, where so much terrible damage was done. About a week after the storms, having been out there and, you know, bringing in, cutting up wood and bringing roof materials out to curbs and doing that work that makes you feel so good, I wanted to do more. And so Saturday morning, I took a walk and I saw the East End Methodist Church. And it was, I'm going to get choked up and start crying. It was so intensely destroyed. And the stained glass is sitting there hanging on, and you can see right into the, you can see the pulpit from the road. It's just smithereens. And I went home and wrote this song real quick. And then this was the day before the national quarantine was announced. Now, we still made the record about 6 feet apart, because that's sort of what you do in a studio anyway. We called Molly Tuttle up. We got a few members of Old Crow. We had a brand new song that was 18 hours old, and then we just sung it. And then we sent it out to our buddies, because then, by then, the quarantine was in. And so a bunch of Old Crows recorded remotely, and then some special guests from the East Nashville community also lended a voice. Then we worked it out with the Community Foundation to have a fundraising initiative. And then we had a great time making this video for it, largely made up of cell phone photos, that many of which I took, or friends from my school took, from just living here in East Nashville where there's so much destruction.
Proceeds from the song will directly benefit the Community Foundation of Middle Tennessee's Emergency Response Fund. Wow. That whole story is crazy. So how is it over by your house now? Because isn't it weird that the tornado hits and then all of a sudden the coronavirus hits and it's like the focus has just been shifted so quickly?
Yeah, it certainly feels really strange, I think, anywhere in the world right now. But here, in at least in East Nashville where I live, there's rubble everywhere. I mean, it's not like it went away here. The cameras went away. A bunch of the volunteers are well, of course, you can't do it anymore. You got to social distancing. So it's like the rebuild is on pause. But the way I've been thinking about it, Bobby, is that our community had a kind of a precursor. Like we got to sneak a peek behind the curtain at what was coming. And what did it make us do? It made us unite. The tornado brought us so close together. Well, now coronavirus has brought us 6 feet apart, but we are still united. And we've got a head start on the kind of unity that our nation is going to need right now. We got a head start on it in Nashville. So when I think about Nashville strong, and when I think about Nashville rising, I think about that for everybody around the country, around the world. Because of our getting through this natural disaster, we are better equipped to handle this second one.
Well, Ketch, you've convinced me. I was on the fence. I was like, I don't know, will we make it? But now I believe we will. After that speech right there, Ketch, I'm totally in, baby. I'm in. Hey, do you let your kids watch Netflix, Ketch?
I'm calling on my land loan because I just got a smartphone. I've been sort of in the dark here, but I just got Instagram and all this other stuff, and it really worked out well because I'm starting to do stuff on Instagram now that I can't tour anymore. But no, to answer your question, Mr. Bones, I have not gotten Netflix yet.
Well, I was wondering because, you know, just knowing of you outside and in real life land a little bit, I knew you probably didn't, but I didn't know if quarantining had opened your eyes to the vast amounts of media there is to consume for your children.
Oh, man, I'm still spinning Pete Seeger records over here. Abby Yo-Yo, I'm going to send you some. I got a new children's book I'm reading a podcast of. This is such a great opportunity to create meaningful media that's community-oriented and for kids. And not to argue that there isn't that stuff on Netflix already, but hey, let's do it right here in Nashville, Tennessee. We don't got to wait for the purveyors from Hollywood. We can do it for one another's kids.
Are you guys going to go back out as soon as all this is over?
Oh, the minute this is over, you can bet Old Crow is going out to celebrate our 22-year victory lap around the most ridiculous story anybody ever told about a street corner string band making it. In the ways, and we're so thankful to Darius, we're so thankful to the Grand Ole Opry and to those sort of institutional mainstream country music pieces that have allowed us to be a part of the story and to reach people, because, Bobby, that's what it's all about. And now, more than ever, we can see that the power of music, it's transcendent. It goes far, far beyond sales or spins. It's about reaching people's hearts and bringing peace and comfort, joy and unity.
Catch, you know, I'm a big fan of you. I love Sally, who you work with, who I'm so close to as well. And she sent me a text. She goes, I think you two are kindred spirits, but I think you are the motivational. I think you are the heart of that spirit. I'm just the guy that pushes the button that talks. So, yeah, Catch, I'm a big fan. It's good to talk to you, man.
Bobby, I'm a big fan of yours too, my friend, and I wish you peace and thank you for speaking to so many people in the way that you are right now with this captive audience that needs to hear this message. So thanks for spinning Nashville Rising. That's what we got right now, and we'll have something new, even, you know, coming up, because that's what you just got to keep singing.
That's true. All right, Catch, good talk to you, bud.
All right, man, peace.